Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck. I'm delighted to be with you and I'm delighted to share. It's another beautiful day in my consciousness. And of course, I'm here with my magnificent co-host, the Rev's Doctors, Bill and Cher Holton, but they're going to introduce it themselves anyway. Hi, guys.
Hey, how are you? We are so glad to be here. This is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton, and it is another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And this is the Reverend Dr. Bill Holton, and it very definitely is another beautiful day in my consciousness, another beautiful, beautiful day. And as you know, we are the co-founders of a hybrid unity ministry called the Unity Center for Universal, youuniversalprosperity.com.
And the quick, speedy way to get there is ucfyp.com. And we invite you to come and check out all our resources.
All the free
our new mentorships, too. We have two new mentorship programs that we invite you to take a peek at.
Right. So there's all the free stuff and the mentorship programs where you get to work with the Rev Doctors. I'll have to call it one on two.
Yeah, I know. I always do that too. I go one on one or two.
One on two. Okay. And so I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com, where you'll find my weekly blog called The Absolute Word. You can also subscribe to that at alberthasselbeck@gmail.com. And of course, my calendar, which says where I'm appearing in the Zoomiverse, hosted by various churches and centers around the country. So we're going to get romping. And of course, Metaphysical Romp is about spirituality, pseudo-spirituality, science, and pseudoscience. And I realize we never tell you which is which, so we leave that up to you. And this is part two of a series of diving a little deeper into prosperity, in particular, some really key quotes found in Charles Fillmore's book on prosperity. And Cher's going to start out by just reading the paragraph as is, and then we're going to dive deeper into it with the intention of maybe demonstrating you how Charles has to be read by understanding the use of his language. Cher.
Yes.
Take it away, reading the paragraph as is, and then we'll do sentence by sentence.
Yes, and I would say to those who are particularly studying for their LUT, that I wish we had had this information that we're going to talk about on how to read Charles. I wish I'd known that when we were starting, because it helps a lot to kind of take him apart and evaluate it.
So yeah, here's and what studying for LUT, we should tell people what that is. Studying to be a licensed unity teacher or even a minister.
A minister too, yes, yeah. Right, because ministers have to read this stuff too, figure it out.
And I've got to say that Paul is Unity's resident expert on Fillmore and Vermilion language. And so we're very privileged to be able to share this with him.
Absolutely.
Woo-hoo, yeah. Thank you.
Woo-hoo. Yes, yes, yes. So Charles is talking about the law of supply. And this comes from Prosperity, pages 67 to 68 in his book or in that area, depending on what edition you have. The law of supply is a divine law. This means that it is a law of mind and must work through mind. God will not go to the grocery and bring food to your table. But when you continue to think about God as your real supply, everything in your mind begins to awaken and to contact the divine substance. And as you mold it in your consciousness, ideas begin to come which will connect you with the visible manifestation. You first get the ideas in consciousness direct from their divine source, and then you begin to demonstrate in the outer. It is an exact law, and it is scientific and unfailing. First the blade, then the ear, then the full grain of ear.
Yeah, what a quote. And this is like the paragraph we looked at last show, we would say last week, where if you understand what it says, you almost have the entirety of the prosperity teaching in Unity. Mm-hmm. So, Cher, let's do this a sentence at a time.
All right. The law of supply is a divine law.
Yeah. So that's I don't know. I struggle with calling this a law. It's more like a premise, you know, that there is this supply. That's basically all this is saying. And you'll get that as we go through it.
Yeah, because he goes into the mind, idea, expression, really, concept
right,
of how
right.
you put the law, how you put the premise or whatever it is into action
yep.
using law. Maybe yes. that's...
And at the end, when he talks about first a blade, then the ear, then the full grain of the ear, that's more like the law and mind, idea, expression, you see? Yeah.
And if we keep it premise, then he's starting with the premise, PS, which is the law of supply.
Yes.
Or in this case, the premise of supply. That would be the PS to begin with.
Right, right. It's a, so the premise is there is this supply.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay, so this means, what he means by it, whatever we call it, is that it is a law or premise of mind and must work through mind. So really what we're getting at there is it's all happening within our mind. It's not something that's going to manifest automatically.
Right. And there's an important piece of information in those two sentences. Even though we disagree that the law of supply really isn't the law, it's more like a premise. Mm-hmm. But what he tells us this is it's a divine law. What he's saying is divine laws pertain to mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's an important piece to know, because a lot of people take some of the spiritual laws and think they apply to the outer realm.
But right.
The spiritual laws or divine laws pertain to how our mind, our little M mind, works.
Mm-hmm. Right. And he gives a perfect example that God will not go to the grocery and bring food to your table.
Now, isn't that just dirt simple? Right. And yet we have people who read that sentence and think God does things for them, brings things for them and all of that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Yeah,
that's not the way it works. And Charles could have reworded that another way. He could have said, the God meme will table any ideas you have about there being a grocery store in the sky.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
You know what? That's I know we're sidetracking here, but that's what the kitchen table is all about, is our discussion. Right. That sentence just reminds me of Myrtle Fillmore not having a kitchen built into her house because exactly. She didn't want to be bothered with cooking. She had more important divine things to do. But she didn't have God bringing food to their table. She had a mother-in-law right next door who did all the cooking, who brought the food to their
table.
That's
right. That's right. And as you said that reminds me that in the South, as you guys know, the kitchen was often in a separate building.
True.
Because yes, the kitchens right. often burned down.
Yeah, yep. That's right. Yep. You're yep. absolutely right. Yeah.
Which is also the same reason why garages were often put in a separate building, because cars could catch fire back in the old days.
I never thought about that. Hmm. Yep. Wow.
And you know, these days, because folks like to eat out and order out, we essentially have more than one kitchen, don't we?
Yeah, we do. But,
all right. All the kitchens around our area.
But really, we actually these days are ordering in.
Right. Yeah, right. These days specifically. Yeah.
Yes, we indeed. Are. Okay.
See how we digress and
it's
yet.
The kitchen table.
It right? connects. Speaking of tables, right?
Yes.
Okay. So Charles goes on to say, but when you continue to think about God as your real supply, and here we might could add, of divine ideas, yeah. Paul so when, added that.
Yeah, when we talk about, or Charles talks about supply, he's talking about all the divine ideas that make up the idea. Mm-hmm. I'll remind our listeners that one of my favorite definitions of the word Christ is the idea that contains all ideas. Mm-hmm. And those would be capital I ideas. And mm-hmm. so when we talk about supply, we're talking about a supply of divine ideas.
Right.
Yep.
And as we realize we have access to all those divine ideas, everything in your mind begins to awaken and to contact the divine substance.
Okay, let's stop there, because he's now been redundant because one of the ways he defines substance is your supply. So substance is a synonym for supply, and substance then is simply divine ideas. Everything in your mind begins to awaken and to contact divine ideas is basically what it's saying. So there's a big redundancy there.
And I think what he's saying is the more you think about it, the more energy you give to it, the more it awakens and becomes more of a getting ready to manifest.
Yes. Yeah, so this would be an example of law of mind action in its own way.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's what he's talking about as he completes the sentence. And as you mold it in your consciousness, that's what we're saying.
Yeah. Right.
As you mold divine ideas in your consciousness, little I ideas begin to come, which will connect you with the visible manifestation.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So you have little I ideas now, mm-hmm. and then you have to use those little ideas or thoughts to manifest in the outer realm.
And mm-hmm. use is a very important word because it signifies the need to take action that's in alignment with the idea that you're thinking about.
Right, right. If you are contacting a divine idea and you have the little idea of grocery, you connect in your mind grocery to grocery store, and then you have to act
right
to get the groceries.
And you could either go to the grocery store, you could get online and order and have it delivered to your house, order it, go pick it up. I mean, there's all kinds of options of how you act. But if you call your best friend and just talk about how hungry you are, that's not an action in alignment with the idea. So you won't get the manifestation.
Exactly. Exactly.
Unless they volunteer to go get you food.
Yeah.
That could happen.
Yeah.
And there's limitation involved here, right?
Oh, yeah. So the divine idea or combination divine ideas are concepts. They're not specifics. And so we have to limit the concept to something more specific. And that's the molding of the idea. Oh, you know what? We need to add too that the way we mold our ideas is with what's been called the power of imagination.
Oh.
And we have to have faith, because faith is defined as the perceiving power of mind linked with the ability to shape substance. So there's powers involved here that are important for first demonstrating in your consciousness and then demonstrating in the outer realm.
Yeah, right. There's some order there too, because if you're working on a specific recipe, then you need to know what it is you need from that grocery store in order to achieve that result.
So. Well, and the very definition of order is right here within the text, mind, idea, expression, as the law of divine order.
Yeah. And as we said before, everything that's manifest comes from the unmanifest.
Correct.
That's where it starts.
Correct. And everything in the manifest comes from the manifest, includes our thoughts, feelings, ideas, images, all of that. And those came from our molding supply.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's the process.
So you can see it laid out. I mean, it's a perfect process and it does work every time.
Every time.
Yeah. And if you don't have a lot of energy to the idea, then it's not going to manifest. Like you could say, you know, we should order a pizza tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, but that means going out and picking it up and it's so nasty out. Why don't we have something else for dinner? Let's see what we've got here. Well, that's a process where you got the idea, but then you just kind of let it go and you work on something else.
And the method to increase the energy is thoughts held in mind with feeling produce more thoughts and feelings of the same kind in your mind.
Right.
Yep.
Yes. Right.
Yes. So that's how you amp up the energy, and you could throw in a good dose of zeal there as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right.
And then you're really going to see it manifest.
And when you throw in the zeal, Paul, what do you get?
Zealicious to me.
Zealicious. Yes. Love that word. Okay, so then he says, we've kind of covered this, but you first get the ideas in consciousness direct from their divine source, and then you begin to demonstrate in the outer. And you have an asterisk here. Do you want me to read the asterisk?
Point? Because now he's jumped a step. You first get the ideas in consciousness direct from your divine source, and then you begin to demonstrate in the outer. And the other sentences talk about an intermediary step. And go ahead and read it.
Okay, so Charles Fillmore leaves out a step that is also in mind here. We, quote, lay hold of divine ideas, consciously or unconsciously, and then we begin to have thoughts and feelings around a relative and changeable idea. And by the law of mind action, we build up more and more thoughts, feelings, and then we act or take action in the outer realm.
Yes.
And we really have talked about this, but that just kind of sums it up.
That sums it up. And so earlier I talked about that being an inner demonstration, which is true, but I rather name it something more specific. It's an inner experience, and that separates in language inner experience from outer demonstration. Mm-hmm. Nice. If you just said demonstration, you don't know which one a person is referring to unless they're very specific. It's just like that's the way I divide up inner experience and outer event when I talk about the realms model. And so outer events are happening, like we're having the outer event of creating this podcast, but each of us is having a distinct and unique inner experience of this event. And so what that does for me, it clarifies things and makes it more specific. So then it's more actionable.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay. So does that pretty much take care of, he says it's an exact law and it's scientific and unfailing. So I think the key is if we don't see it happening, we want to go back and look at our own process.
Yes.
And we can find where we aren't giving it maybe the feeling we need, or we're not taking the actions that manifest.
Yes.
But if we do it, it's going to produce that result.
Well, and the thing is if it's failing, that it's not the law that's failing. We are skipping a step. We're not adding enough energy or any of those things that will ensure demonstration. But here's the thing. At the level of our consciousness, it's never failing.
Right.
Mm. Never failing. So if you're having a little idea that you've molded from the big idea, you've already succeeded, but it's having to build that substance up in our consciousness first, so we have a bigger inner experience that we then motivate ourselves to take action.
And can we add one thing we've noticed in our studying the Universal Prosperity Principle is that the other piece that sometimes is missing here is the need to understand the basic principles of the environment in which you're trying to manifest.
Oh, so you're talking about the outer stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like if it's money, if it's around money and you want to manifest it and you think I've done all this stuff and it's still not showing up, it could be because you don't fully understand the money principles that are in operation in Skin School.
Yeah.
And it's important to, some people don't think they need to know that, but wherever you are in an environment, it's important to understand what principles are acting there in the outer realm so that you can manifest it in the best, in most easy way.
So if we put it in a big picture, we have to know how nature works. We could put it that way, but we have to know how business works or real estate works or owning a business works. And those are all of the outer realm.
Right. Mm-hmm. How does credit work? How do the banks work? I mean, people don't want to mess with that. Sometimes they say, well, I don't need to worry about that. But if money is the focus you're on right now, that's important to know. If health is the focus you're on right now, it's important to understand the principles of how we eat and exercise and what your own inner stuff is about food and, you know, all those triggers. So,
yeah. So we got to know the natural law.
Yep, right, exactly.
Basically. Okay, so it's time to pivot. We're going to pivot to the absolute word, which is based on Sunday messages appearing in the Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. And just to remind everybody, if you want this sent to you weekly, you can email me at alberthasselbeck@gmail.com, where that's one word, Albert Hasselbeck. And this comes from our Sunday, which is about to happen, which happens to be Valentine's Day, February 14th. The words are heart expressing. And the affirmation is, you are dear to me. I hold you in my heart. Divine love is a principle I apply by sharing love and compassion. Divine love is alive in every heart. My loving nature sees the best in every person whose life touches mine. Saint Valentine fashioned pieces of parchment into hearts, which he gave to others as tokens of his compassion and divine love. I continue this tradition when I say, you are dear to me. I value you. You matter as I hold you in my heart and mind with a card, gift, call, or a simple act of kindness. I lavishly love with no expectation of return. My heart resonates with every expression of love from others. My awareness of love's presence expands and grows by giving generously and receiving gratefully. You are dear to me. I hold you in my heart. Yes. And whatever time of the year is you're listening to this, happy Valentine's Day. We don't have to limit it to one day. We value you as our listeners. And of course, I value you, Bill and Cher, and I'm grateful for the time we get to share together. I'm grateful for this time around the virtual kitchen table. And for now, this is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck saying goodbye.
And this is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton saying thank you so much. We hold you dear in our hearts, and we are so grateful for you.
And this is Reverend Dr. Bill Holton, and I'm going to add my Valentine's Day thought as well.